What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
It's been 836 days since October 7th, 2023. In that time, Israel has murdered well over 70,000 Palestinians. It has demolished all infrastructure, hospitals, schools, buildings. Palestine is facing its winter right now. There are no structures to keep people safe. In addition to dying of starvation and the bombs that continue after the so-called ceasefire, the second ceasefire on October 10th, over 10,000 Palestinians have been murdered, and they continue to die not just from bombing, but from starvation and now from the cold. Here on Law and Disorder, we have spent the last many Mondays over the last two plus years doing Palestine Post, where we spend a full hour on Palestinian coverage, Israel's genocide against the Palestinian people, Palestinian resistance to it, and its impact on the region and the rest of the world. Our guest today is Samer Arabi, member of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. What's cracking, Samers?
Morning, Kat. Great to be here.
It's good to have you, man. One day you're going to be on, we're going to be talking about something else. We're going to talk about a free Palestine. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, one day.
One day.
It's coming.
It is coming. Slowly, but it is on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Samer, yesterday, the city of Oakland did what we do, and thousands of people exploded into the streets, reclaiming the radical legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as we have done for 12 years. Our Palestinian comrades, APTP's Palestinian comrades, have always been a part of that event. And were again yesterday, your comrades, Nadia and Muhammad, came and spoke. But I wanted to give you, I never asked it. I hate when people say, what do you think so-and-so would say? Now, I don't know they're dead. But I do. My least favorite question. I just look at reporters like, but I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about lessons from Dr. King, particularly post-1967, right, where he seemed to have a radical shift in consciousness. And what lessons to be pulled for our moment right now as we fight for a free Palestine?
Yeah, you're right. It's difficult often to extrapolate what somebody would say in a context that's like, you know, 80 years removed or whatever from where we are right now. And literally the exact same underlying structural issues that MLK was talking about in those last few years are exactly the ones that we're dealing with right now. You know, like there's the famous three evils speech, right, where he highlights militarism, racism, and materialism as the three things like driving the like moral and structural collapse of the country. And it's literally exactly where we are right now, right? And the way that those three pieces intertwine, right? So like the way in which a sort of orientalization and a racism and a sort of projection of inhumanity on a people allows for the continuing genocide of the Palestinian people. It allows for like all these bombings and takeovers and colonial captures that are happening. And we see the underlying material, like the material motivations behind all of that, right? That this desire for natural resources and the shipping lane control and things like that. So I think understanding those pieces and how they connect to each other is critical. And I think MLK did it in a way that's really, you know, I found myself going back to his writings last week, not only because MLK Day was coming up,
such a scholar.
I felt so overwhelmed by all the different things that were happening, right, all at once. This past week, I know I talked to you a week ago, but it feels like it's been a year, that like I was looking for ways to sort of, you know, find what the through lines here are. Like, how can we condense our understanding of all these different things into something that's easily comprehensible and sort of leads towards a clear plan of action? And, you know, he's actually a really good person to go to for that. So there's a lot there, right? There's some quotes, you know, that I was like looking for that feel like they were written yesterday, right? And that's both terrifying but also useful.
The speech you're talking about, we played it yesterday. It's my favorite speech by Dr. King. Of course, it's called Beyond Vietnam. And it's the speech that got him killed, quite frankly, right? It's the speech where he called the United States the greatest purveyor of evil in the world. He named those three isms, the thing that made that speech dangerous, because he was sort of a man of everybody, right? Which so they allowed him basically to sort of move when he tied race to class.
Right.
He made that fatal mistake, he made that fatal announcement, proclamation. It was not a mistake. Mm-hmm. It was dead on. Mm-hmm. Same as Chairman Fred Hampton with the Rainbow Coalition, right, uniting people across race and across class. Not separating them, not saying one didn't matter, but connecting. I have to point that out for some of our friends, but connecting the two. What you said about, right, I feel like they were written yesterday. One of the things that I said yesterday when I was on my soapbox for probably way too long at the march was about this moment, Sam, and I just respect your mind so much, so I'm going to put this to you too. It was about this moment that people are sort of walking around going, not sort of, people are like, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe America is doing this. I don't understand this level of violence. They're killing our people. And it really, for me, it was an aha too, because a reporter asked me about, like, what was the significance of this MLK Day? Why were his words, why is remembering his radical legacy, not the whitewashed one, so important right now? And I started to talk about, you know, it's important that we learn from my usual la la. We have to learn from the past in order to inform the present. And it just, I was like, and I think it's really important for people to understand that when King was alive and he was doing his work, Black people were being hung from trees. Mm-hmm. Indigenous people were being murdered on their land. You couldn't, if you were Black, drink from a water fountain without being killed or arrested, right? Freedom riders were being beaten with pipes and chains. The law, air quotes for those who can't see me, was being used as the doorway, the pathway to inflict violence of people on this soil in this country. So while this moment is awful and it's terrible and it's definitely a transition out of, Tarha talks about two ways that our government moves, smooth and soothe, that's Obama, smash and grab, that would be Donald Trump.
Mm.
It's not unprecedented. This is America.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's spot on. And I would say, you know, I think we need to reckon with the fact that the reason that this moment feels different is that that state violence has expanded to white folks. But like, really, I mean, you know, like we have to be real here that we live in a moment where, and you know, this was something that folks were talking about back in the 60s, right? That if you think this sort of like fascistic state violence and repression is going to just be contained to communities of color, you're delusional, right? Like this is the way that empire moves, right? It starts with the most vulnerable people, and then it expands outwards. And here we are in a moment where, you know, no one, right? Like, you know, you talk about an era in which the like comfort and security and safety and longevity of communities of color were sacrificed for the well-being and comfort of a white middle class. And that no longer exists, right? Like the concept of the middle class itself is sort of collapsing in on itself. We now have a tiny group of oligarchs and everybody else is now the sort of like giant, you know, proletarianized, like oppressed class. And so, you know, not for nothing, right? And I think this requires a double reckoning. On the one hand, thinking about the ways in which, you know, this sort of state violence has existed and has always existed. And like, that's, you know, thinking through the through lines. And, you know, there's something that sits a little poorly, right? That like the sort of flashpoint in Minnesota was, you know, the killing of a white person, right? Where all, that felt like it got more attention than the many, 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 many ICE and police killings of people of color. And that's not to, you know, put anything against, like, you know, by all accounts, this was a really incredible person doing really incredible work. But, you know, this is what we were talking about earlier, the sort of race and class intersecting and us reckoning with what that really means and where we are in this, like, political moment in this country's history where the facade of like, oh, we can keep one large group safe at the expense of everybody else is like, that's not how capitalism works, right? Eventually, everyone gets fed to the meat grinder. So, you know, here we are in a moment, I think, where we're seeing the meat grinder, you know, taking in this like much broader set of people and people are freaking out, which like, yeah, okay, yes, I understand why you're freaking out in this moment. It is a system in collapse, but it is not new. It is just new for a new group of people.
I think we have. So I have a new kitten, and so you will hear banging and things, and he's just like
Incredible.
running all over, doing all the things. It really is. It's he's giving. It's he's saving my life right now.
I love
He
that.
has no idea how horrible human beings are. I think we have to be careful with language. And so outraged. It was awful. The way in which Renee Good was murdered was horrific. I think we have to be careful when we say it has ex the violence of the state has expanded to include white people. I think the threat of violence has expanded to include white people. One dead white woman does not expansion into the white world make.
Yeah, it's a very good
And
point. Yeah.
yesterday, I talked about, I didn't say her name. I just had to look it up while you were talking. Because it just came to me, was people may or may not know the name Viola Gregg Louisa. She was the white woman that was supporting the Montgomery, the Selma voting rights activity. And she was murdered by the Klan in 1965. That too, if you go back and look at history, was a flashpoint for white folks, because here was this white housewife, right, who was doing what she thought was right and was murdered. And again, you saw an influx of white people into the movement because their illusion that they were safe and they could sort of do whatever they wanted to was shattered in the Klan. Well, the Klan wasn't always the government, but still, right? I guess at this point in time, and we will get to Palestine, I promise. I think I did with you last time. We see this happen again and again, that white folks get agitated when their white privilege is threatened or impacted in some way. And they wouldn't say it like that, and I don't even think it's conscious, right, honestly. But then they settle back into the benefits of the white privilege and they get unagitated. And so and even from the jump, sort of with this ICE stuff, right? Folks who talk about they want the America that they used to have. They want Biden's America. I have no interest in Biden's America. I have no interest in Obama's America. So the question
Absolutely.
now is how we bring our white people along to help them understand that this was never work. Before Renee Good was murdered, this was not ever working for you. It does not work for you, and it's not finna work for you. And how we sustain them in this for the long haul, because this is a long haul fight. Now, if Trump and his level of smash and grab might help that along, right? Because people's
They'll feel that way. Yeah.
they're so offended at the violation of the Constitution. Like that might be it, and maybe we need to get schooled on them talking points. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we got to meet people where they're at, and I think that's probably partly true. And I think you're right that systemically and structurally, that movement towards us is somewhat inevitable, and we need to be ready to bring those people in and make sure that they don't turn. You know, we've talked about this a bunch of times on the show together that we're living in this moment of the dying embers of neoliberalism, and where people go from there can go in a lot of different directions. And it is critical, I think, to pull people into grounded left critique as opposed to letting them slide into, the opposite of that, right? Which is a sort of fascistic nationalism, which I think it'll be really easy for folks to dump into. But, I think this idea of the proletarianization of the white middle class is actually a really important thing that's happening right now, and this sort of AI automation and all this stuff is basically doing, it's in very early stages, but I think it's not unreasonable to think that it's going to do to white collar workers what deindustrialization did to blue collar workers. And I think that's going to create a radically different set of social and economic conditions for people to really change their relationship with the state. But what that looks like and where it goes, I think, is going to depend on a lot of different things. And a key piece of it is us, right? Do we articulate a vision for folks to come in and feel like, we can create something better, and we're articulating a vision for what a world free from that sort of, enforced artificial precarity looks like. But it's hard. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard. And just to say, right, that violence against white folks who have, crossed the line or whatever, is as old as the history of this country, right? Where colonists would attack white folks that went to move with indigenous communities. So yeah, here we are at like the, you know, like the through line from all of that to where we are now is not missing. And you're right to draw that and the exceptionalism of that too. Yeah.
I'm going to move on to Palestine. For folks, there's a great analysis floating around Facebook that if you haven't seen, you can find it pretty easy. It's a redheaded woman. I don't know her name. but she's talking about, just, you know, just scrolling, like, oh, that's her. And she's talking about that this is the cost, right? Losing your benefits of white privilege is the cost of doing what's right. She says it better than me. She's talking to her cousins. You all should go check her out. And a lot of black folks, including me, reposted. It's like this is the thing. This is the cost. Yeah. Same, right? All right. You and I last Monday, and you're right. It feels like it's been a year because I legit thought I was going to just take some of the questions from last Monday that I didn't get to. That's part of why I wanted to be back because I want to talk about that stuff. I was like, all of that is irrelevant now. Moving.